This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello and welcome to Beyond the Ballot Box. I'm Dashrin Yohai. The Prime Minister, Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin, has resigned. UMNO's Ismail Sabri Yaakob is on track, or at least seemingly on track, to become the ninth Prime Minister of Malaysia after reportedly that he has commanded the confidence of 114 members of parliament, three more than required to form a simple majority government. However, there are also some sources that say that it's the YDPA's wish that all parties can unite for, you know, just for a few months, weather the COVID-19 storm, and then, you know, we can go all out politicking as we prepare for the elections. So we're going to be discussing everything that has been going on in our extremely fluid political scene and what it means for our health, economic and political crisis. So joining me on the show to help me unpack it all is Iskandar Faris, the Communications Director at REFSA. Welcome to the show, Iskandar. How are you doing?
Thank you, Dashrin. Happy to be here again. I'm doing well.
Let's get into it. A lot has happened over the past week. So let's start from the top, just in case some people out there are not caught up to speed yet. What did you make of the Prime Minister Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin's resignation?
Okay, I feel that's the beauty of democracy. We get to choose our leaders and then we get to remove them if they don't perform well. I mean, his resignation has multiple layers to it. It's not that people ask him to resign one day and then he stepped down the other day. It's a long, drawn-out process that involves multiple demonstrations, multiple petition, multiple political moves, until he reached a point that he doesn't have any other choice than to resign. So I think to put into context the background or what's happening behind the scenes is that there's an enormous perception that the government he helmed, which was Perikatan Nasional, has failed on multiple fronts. First, the COVID-19 management, then the aftershocks of that management process, which leads to economic failure and people being deprived of making a living safely. Then there's this other front of abuse of democratic institution. We see parliament being muzzled, using the emergency as a pretext to not convene parliament. And also, let's not forget the bungling process of the revocation of emergency ordinance, where there was some misleading of the parliament and also the general public that it has been revoked, but then the Yang di-Pertuan Agong says otherwise. So there's ultimately this build up to a serious crisis of confidence in Muhyiddin's leadership and also tarnish his credibility to continue to lead. So whatever offers he made at the end of his tenure, people seems not to believe him anymore. People want new leadership to helm the country.
And that, I think, is something that perhaps caught a lot of people by surprise. In his final days, you know, as the Prime Minister, when, you know, he knew that without a shadow of a doubt, he has lost the numbers, the Prime Minister, or well, now former Prime Minister, dangled reforms like a carrot. Various reforms, including setting a two-term limit for Prime Minister for the Prime Minister. You know, finally implementing the lowering of voting age from 21 to 18, as it already has been, you know, amended in the Constitution, and a number of other reforms. So he was doing this in hopes to get support and a confidence and supply agreement. So, you know, the likes of Tony Pua, Ong Kian Ming from DAP said that it's something that should be considered. But most members of the opposition disagreed, and they were all on the same page. It seems like Twitter, people on Twitter were on the same page too. And they felt that, no, it's time for Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin to resign. This is not an offer that we should take up. But a number of people have also said, and I think this is pretty much what Tony Pua have implied as well, that when your opponent is at its weakest, you bring them to the negotiating table, the art of war. All of this is moot right now. But, you know, as they say, hindsight is 2020. What is your perspective on the matter now?
Okay, so I think what happened here, former Prime Minister's Muhyiddin Said, the crisis is actually their own making. This idea of a bipartisan governing approach, CSA, has been mooted even last year during budget 2021 when it was put to the House for a vote. But we saw nothing of that sort emerge from this proposal. In fact, we've seen various politicians and also activists from the opposition bench suggested that, okay, we should do this in a bipartisan manner. These are our ideas to combat the pandemic. These are our ideas to manage the economy better. Here is how we can move away from intermittent lockdowns. All these ideas have been laid out to the table since last year. But unfortunately, on the administration side, the PN side, there's no sincerity or openness to these new ideas. And they seem to be adamant to go on track of their own plans. They are very confident that their plans could work. And they shunned other ideas. So that's where we see PN ended up being the most unpopular government in history. Right. But I guess that also stacks up against their own interests, because they had all this time to actually propose bipartisanship. Only at the tail end of its administration that it went in public to say that, okay, let's approach this crisis in a bipartisan manner. At that time, they've already expired all general goodwill that they've accumulated over time. We can't deny that Muhyiddin at one point was quite popular among the people and among the general public, but that goodwill has been diminished over time due to many factors: mismanagement in the pandemic, the double standards in enforcing SOPs, and also the flip flops that we see from one policy to another: education, healthcare, testing, vaccination. So all this accumulates to diminishing goodwill that resulted in the people having zero trust or even negative trust to the administration, even when they propose something as noble as a bipartisan approach towards governing moving forward.
Putting that aside, because, you know, whether we think they should have taken up the offer or they shouldn't have taken up the offer, you know, that's irrelevant right now, because that ship has sailed, the prime minister has resigned, and we will be getting a new prime minister. Now, one of the front runners that, according to media reports, is UMNO's Ismail Sabri. What can you tell us about this MP? What can you tell us about Ismail Sabri, his leadership qualities, and the public's perception of him?
Okay, so this episode is currently still developing. Mm-hmm. At the time of when we are still discussing, the Rulers' Council will be deliberating on this matter tomorrow, in fact, on Friday. Today, the palace is verifying the SDs that has been submitted yesterday. So, reports have said that Ismail Sabri is leading. And if that is the matter of fact, and if that's the case, and eventually he becomes prime minister, I don't see anything changing per se, because let's not forget, let's keep in mind that he was the deputy prime minister before PN collapsed, before Perikatan Nasional collapsed. So technically, he has shown some side of governing. He has some track record to measure against. And also, let's not forget that throughout the pandemic, he was overseeing the National Security Council, the MKN, which was in charge of the SOPs, the reopening and closing of the economic sector, and how all these different industry sectors work together to operate during the pandemic. So we can actually test or gauge his performance then, and then extrapolate on what's going to happen in the future. So during his period of overseeing the NSC, we see flip-flops in SOPs. In fact, post Sabah election, he was the one who announced that there wasn't a need to quarantine. So his record in that sense, a bit disappointing. And in terms of cabinet composition, I don't think we'll see any different than the Perikatan Nasional composition, mainly because the Perikatan Nasional composition of cabinet was formed to maintain the survival of the coalition, of the Perikatan coalition. You can see each party leader getting something just to secure that support.
Right.
So in the sense, if Ismail Sabri comes up to the helm, he would need to do the same. He need to align interests of all the party leaders so that he can manage to cobble this, he can form a kind of stable cabinet that has some semblance of stability to move forward. And whether he wants it or not, he will be continuously have to deal with this problem of confidence. And it's not going to be just one vote of confidence. He has to face up that each and every vote will be a vote of confidence against his administration. If he proposes a new bill, that will be a test. If he proposes a new budget, that will be a test. So he will be facing these multiple layers of vote of confidence moving forward, and that will be the true test of his upcoming leadership.
Right. So with that in mind, right, where does that leave our health and economic crisis? Because if we look at, again, none of this is confirmed yet, and we will have more clarity after the Council of Rulers meeting on Friday. But again, just looking at the current media reports, where we stand right now, what we know right now, you know, the component parties that are reportedly supporting Ismail Sabri is Bersatu, UMNO, GPS, PAS, few other parties, MCA, MIC, and all of that, which is literally Perikatan Nasional. So, you know, and we the reason people, for example, took it to the streets, you know, you brought up one of, if not the most unpopular government, you know, in Malaysian history. The reason all of this happened is because they were unable to contain the COVID-19 pandemic. And then if we see on a similar note, UMNO themselves pulled out of Perikatan Nasional, causing the collapse of the Perikatan Nasional government. They, as UMNO, and frankly, many of these politicians usually do, they made like a big media drama, secret meetings, headquarters meetings, Supreme Council meetings, all sorts of things. They are the ones that pulled out of Perikatan Nasional, that caused the collapse of the Perikatan Nasional ultimately. But now Bersatu, and in essence Perikatan Nasional, is supporting an UMNO candidate. PAS, just a few days ago, I think last week, pointed out that what UMNO did, which is pull out of the Perikatan Nasional cabinet, is not the right thing to do. But now even they are all working together again. So if we do get a Perikatan Nasional 2.0, what was last week's political drama all about?
So last week's political drama was a culmination of many factors. Mm. On the UMNO side, some segments see the unpopular sentiment, the public sentiment against the current administration at that time, as a right opportunity to strike. Basically, we all know that UMNO, ever since the inception of Perikatan Nasional Government, they've been quite at the losing end of the administration or the government, because Bersatu as the candidate, the prime minister candidate, they've been consolidating power. You see the ministerial appointments mostly in favor of Bersatu, even though they have the least amount of seats. UMNO was kept quite a distance from the center of power. And at the same time, Bersatu has been poaching their members to join Bersatu. And then we see multiple branches of UMNO divisions move or jump over to Bersatu. There's also the factor of Sabah election, as I mentioned earlier, where a new Bersatu chief minister was installed. So all this peeved UMNO in a sense that they see Bersatu as a threat. And if you follow the narrative by the UMNO side, I'm talking about one side of the UMNO, because UMNO also is not united as we thought it to be. They've been pushing for an UMNO prime minister all this while. They said that this Perikatan Nasional is a failure of leadership by Bersatu prime minister. So installing an UMNO prime minister would solve the problem. So that in essence is actually the issue between these two parties, because they both of them are pursuing this notion of political dominance, not really political compromise or co-governing. So they are doing these political moves against each other that causes instability in the then Perikatan Nasional government. So if it's indeed the same formulation or the same composition of cabinet, I think if the new prime minister wants to do things differently, it should consider bipartisanship and reaching out to the opposition aisle. Any new PM should use the reforms offered by Muhyiddin as a baseline for bipartisan co-governance. And these ideas include how to change strategy in managing pandemic and how to empower MPs to become the head of or the chairman of select committees in parliament that can work together with ministries to deal with different sort of challenges that emerge during a pandemic. So we are not talking just about a cabinet, a war cabinet, but also a war parliament to deal with the matter of COVID. So that, I think, is the way to go if we want to put the agenda of the people back on the table for everyone to discuss and for everyone to address.
Anwar Ibrahim, which is the leader of the opposition, he has been saying since 2008 that he has the numbers. We all know what's the reality. He said it again last year. This time, though, he didn't say it. In fact, he didn't make any grand statements. And for the most part, he's been pretty quiet. However, again, just to stress, we are looking at the media reports that are currently out. Once again, it seems like he was unsuccessful in his attempt to pull enough MPs on his side. If this is indeed the case, if Anwar Ibrahim perhaps once again did not manage to secure enough MPs on his side to get the majority, do you think this puts a dent on his support within and out within the party, as well as does it change public opinion of him?
I feel that this statement could be premature because we are still in the whole process. If we reflect back on Sheraton Week, it feels like deja vu.
It really does.
But things move very fast and turns, the twists and turns come out every day. So I reserve my comments first. Let's see how things turn out. And then I guess we can revisit this question after the whole week, and then we get a new prime minister.
Putting that aside, let's not think about who has whether it's Ismail Sabri or whether it's Anwar or whatever. And let's look at the concept of this next part of the question. Because according to reports from The Vibes, a source said that the King, YDPA, wants a candidate who he thinks is best able to manage the pandemic. And that if the king feels the candidate that has the majority isn't good enough, he will ask the MPs to pick someone else. Now, I'm no constitutional expert, but from what I understand, according to the constitution, the king's job is to appoint the candidate who he thinks commands the majority of the MPs, and then they test it in parliament. But now, it seems like the MPs' refusal to compromise, MPs from both sides of the aisle coming together and compromise, has, as many constitutional lawyers have repeatedly said, and I quote, put the YDPA in an awkward position, turning him into an umpire. And this could set a precedent. What is your take on the matter?
So the whole Sheraton move and also the impasse that we see today do in fact put the YDPA in a very awkward position. Hmm. I assume the difference between today's impasse with a Sheraton move is the recourse of parliament. There is that added measure of proving the support in parliament. So we are following procedure in a way, and it's up to the aspiring PM candidate to then cobble up enough support so that he survives, his cabinet also survives the vote of confidence that is about to come. Mm. So in this sense, we can see the statement by Istana in a new light. It was mentioned in a line of the statement that we should pursue a no-winner-takes-all mentality. So no, the winner doesn't win everything, the loser doesn't lose everything. It needs to be a compromise. So this hints toward bipartisan co-governance in the future. And this is where I stress in many of my engagement that the potential candidate for PM needs to show or demonstrate some sincerity in co-governing. Firstly, by limiting the powers of PM. That has been a very serious contention in the previous administration of PM. And it could be the source of dispute in the future government, whether it's a unity government, a minority government, we won't know. But that could still be the force that pulls them apart. So this requires some political will. But I think when we talk about a coalition of former rivals, there's no better time to implement institutional reform than this, because none of them will trust each other, right? Mm. Like, we are talking about former rivals. They've fought against each other and then make up again and then fought again. Like, how are they going to trust each other? So this is the right time for the potential PM candidate to say, okay, I understand you guys don't trust me. I'm limiting my powers as PM. I'm empowering the select committees to then formulate. We can formulate a policy together. So put some safeguards that the executives cannot just bulldoze its way through. So now we have an opportunity to empower the parliament, the legislative arm of the government, so that they can co-govern in this time of crisis. So let's not waste this opportunity. We have a time where the right sets of reform can be introduced and should be introduced because of the dynamics of our political landscape. Let's use this in a productive way to solve the issues faced by the people in terms of health crisis, education crisis, economic crisis, social crisis. So we are in this, might as well we make the best use of it. Let's not forget our democracy is still a maturing democracy. We are still a young democracy. And we've been handed this legacy of one-party state rule. So we've gotten used to one party ruling over us for multiple periods of election, multiple terms. We've gotten used to the dominance. The governing party needs to have dominance. That's the general mindset that we are attuned to.
Right.
But now we are indeed in a multi-party state, and I guess our mindset has yet to catch up with that reality. So what happens, if I can use Bersatu as an example, is that when Bersatu took over Helm, SPM, they were still putting the UMNO dominant hat in its place as the de facto working principal. They thought that they need to gain dominance either by party hopping or using the institutions to solidify power. That's why we see some MPs jumping. There were arrests, threats made. So just that they can try to consolidate power and then continue to survive until the next election. That doesn't work anymore in a multi-party system. Because like I said earlier, your support will be tested at every round, at every bill, at every budget you present to the parliament. And you can't shut down parliament forever. You can't use emergency or whatever to muzzle the parliamentary process so that you can continue to secure power. That doesn't work. We can see that with Perikatan Nasional. They eventually fell, even with these authoritarian measures, I would say. So there needs to be a mindset shift within this group of policymakers. They need to accept that the one-party rule age has gone by. It's a bygone era. And they need to accept this is the time to work together, either you're from government or opposition, to come together to face this existential threat, which is COVID and other crises, which is economic, education, health, and social. So the upcoming government really need to play its role in shifting this mindset so that the other blocs, the upcoming opposition, the independent bloc, can then move together to address the current mega crisis that we are facing today.
On the show with me today is Iskandar Faris, Communications Director at the think tank REFSA. After a break, I'll be asking him about a unity government and if that's the best compromise to get us through the pandemic. We'll be back for more on Beyond the Ballot Box, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Beyond the Ballot Box. I'm Dashran Johan. And on the show with me today is Iskandar Faris, the Communications Director at the think tank REFSA. And we're talking about, well, just about everything really that's currently transpiring in our pretty intense, polarized, and frankly messy political situation right now. So, Iskandar, a couple of days ago, the big guns from each party had a meeting with the YDPA to basically talk about what can happen next. And since then, there's been plenty of talk about a unity government. Now, yesterday on Astro Awani, UMNO Youth Chief Ashraf Wajdi Dusuki, he explicitly said that the king in the meeting, according to what he has heard, of course, said that in the meeting, the king specifically wished for a government that, and I quote, mempunyai sifat perpaduan or unity, regardless if a majority is found or not. Now, we know that in an ideal world, we don't want a unity government because having no opposition removes another layer of checks and balances, and we don't have that many layers of checks and balances in Malaysia anyway. But these are desperate times. Do you think a unity government is what we need just to get us through the storm for another 6 to 8 months and then we can, call for elections? What are your thoughts on this?
Okay, so the thought about unity government, in a way, we might seen some sort of a unity government in Barisan Nasional last time when we faced our first emergency. But even then, some of the opposition members decided to stay on the opposition bench to ensure there are still check and balances. The statement by the palace does seem to point towards the possibility of the next government being a unity government. And I guess when that happens, so we need to have another conversation because we won't know what kind of composition this government would be and how the cabinet makeup will be and who will be leading the unity government. So those are questions that we need to ask when the time comes. But I think before even talking about that, the measures or the checklist I mentioned earlier should be a precursor to build a functioning government in the future. What I mean by that is that how can you ensure this government can still work together if they distrust each other, right? If we look back at Perikatan Nasional, even though they are not such a big tent, they did have former rivals working together. Arguably, this would be much a smaller scope than a unity government. A unity government will have more parties, different ideologies, different sentiments. It could be bitter rivals. So then therein lies that we need, or the upcoming prime minister need to implement these reforms even more urgently, because how can these former rivals trust the upcoming prime minister, if he acts out as this presidential prime minister that rules over every other allied party? So the dynamics of teamwork or collaboration needs to change. Without this change, we can't have a functioning government. And let's be honest, even an election, like you said just now, let's have this government as an interim before an election. And then people can, after COVID, people can sort out again, and then another government can emerge from that. Even the fact of an election may not change the composition or the makeup of our parliament, because the elected reps are a reflection of the society. And there's no guarantee that a new election would give anyone a clear majority. So we might end up on square one again after election. So that's a fact that we need to accept. So until these political parties rid themselves of this nonsensical pursuit of dominance, we will keep, we will be trapped forever in this loop of political impasse, because no one wants to budge. So this is a very hard lesson to learn. In fact, there's a more deep-seated belief that they need to unlearn before we can move forward. So I believe that's the whole main lesson from the political impasse that we are facing right now. And it requires a very strong political will to change before we get to the next stage.
If you were to create a unity government, right? What, or if, you know, if you don't know who's listening to the show, what would you tell them in terms of how to make it as balanced and as functional without it being bloated and all of that? What do they, whoever is making this decision, right? What do they need to keep in mind?
So there are many factors actually, but I guess for the benefit of listeners today, let's focus on one big key area, okay, which is health leadership. So the folly of the previous administration is that it puts in place a person who's not that qualified as a health minister, which arguably is now, as we can see, you know, from hindsight, is the most important portfolio in this era because of COVID. So that is one. Secondly, Muhyiddin has started this approach of clustering its ministries. I think that can continue with the much needed improvement of increasing coordination between ministries. So you have this cluster, but make sure this cluster can serve the purpose of coordinating each of these ministries to serve a purpose. So in the upcoming cabinet, hopefully there will be a cluster that comprises of a social sector that is led by the health minister. And the health minister needs to be a credible individual who can get the machine rolling towards treating and ending this crisis of COVID. So it needs support from multiple ministries, because we understand by now that combating COVID is no longer just a health issue. It cuts across the economic front, the social and welfare front, the education front. So there needs to be better coordination among all these ministers, and hopefully a bipartisan bridge can be built, having reflective select committees on the parliament, in the parliament itself. So if you have a social cluster, then you need a social sector parliament select committees that is helmed by the opposition. And then these two units can work together, having professionals be part of the select committees also. So then you can really have this whole of government, whole of society approach without it being just a lip service. You really have all arms of the institution, of our democratic institution, working in sync towards one goal of addressing our deeply seated and pressing matter of COVID, the COVID war.
Now, just switching gears a little bit, Iskandar, away from COVID-19, another thing that's a concern among many Malaysians is, where does this leave former Prime Minister Najib Razak and the president of UMNO, Ahmad Zahid Hamidi, now that we may be getting a prime minister from UMNO? I think we have stressed this so many times on the show. I will just stress it again. Nothing is confirmed yet. We are just going with the flow as new developments unfold. So as of right now, assuming that Ismail Sabri is the front runner, some suggest that this will strengthen Ahmad Zahid Hamidi and Najib's position within UMNO, while others say that Ismail Sabri will phase out Zahid Hamidi and Najib and essentially defeat their faction in the UMNO party elections, effectively becoming, quote unquote, the new king of UMNO. What are your thoughts on this?
That's a very interesting question. And we can see how there are multiple interpretations to the events that is happening right now. Even it's hard to say which faction would win or whether they would consolidate, but there are grumblings from the UMNO side that there would be a round two of a face-off between these few factions. Right. And I don't say Ismail Sabri as one faction and Najib as one faction. I think there are a few factions within UMNO that has realigned to these two blocks. But eventually, as the events unfold, things can change. So we cannot dismiss that. Things can change. Things can evolve according to the state of events that we see happening every hour or every day. But what matters are the milestones that we need to look at. Firstly, of course, who becomes Prime Minister? The next one is when will the UMNO general election be? The other one is when will the general election be? Because these two things actually then demonstrate who has the more power at the time. Right. Let's say if general election happens before UMNO general election, then Zahid can actually use his power as president to approve candidates for UMNO. Then you would see some sort of a cleanse in UMNO, in a way that Zahid can actually just promote those who are aligned to him as candidates of UMNO. So where would that leave the factions that are against Zahid? Mm. Right? So there's also another scenario where UMNO election can be before general election. In that sense, if Ismail Sabri is Prime Minister, then he could use his influence to secure support as a president. So these are all the different questions that we need to have in mind as the events unfold and see how the outcome develops itself.
All right. Now, Iskandar, finally, I want to touch on something that political scientist Prof. Wong Chin Huat said yesterday on the evening edition, which really struck a chord with me. And he said, and I quote, "I think the good thing about these episodes, after two prime ministers have resigned before their term ends, is that Malaysians are getting used to it. It's okay to change the prime minister. The world does not collapse." And this is a fantastic achievement for Malaysians. People didn't run out and stock up on Maggie Mee. 20 years ago, if you say the prime minister is going to change, people would have run out and stocked up in a panic. Is this, Iskandar, to you, a sign of a slowly maturing democracy?
Yes, I would agree with that statement. Even if we look at it from our own lens, right? In a few years ago, we would assume there was only like one or two prime minister candidate. Even in Sheraton, during Sheraton Move, there's only a few, one to three. Now we have multiple names being bandied out as prime minister candidate. So eventually, if there is another round of change of government, there'll be more candidates being put out to be selected. So we are going through a maturing process in terms of democracy. As a young democracy, surely it comes with teething problem, and we are seeing it today. We have to accept at the end of the day that no one will agree with us 100%. There will be differences, because that's the essence of democracy, is to manage differences. And in a multi-party system, we can't expect stability in the conventional sense. We might not achieve political stability in that way. It will be elusive, but we can actually at least aim for us to form a functioning political order where the government works together with the opposition. What this might achieve is that when you have both parties, both sides of the aisle working together on a policy, so next time when there's a change of government, you don't run the risk of changing the core policies. You see today when Wee Ka Siong actually remove the exemption of the cabotage policy, we lose out in terms of investment of digitization. Google and other tech players pull out from Malaysia in terms of mega projects of cable that could have brought leaps and bounds of achievement to our national digitization project. So this could be prevented in the future if we have both sides of the aisle working towards the same policy. That's the aim for the long run. When I say to have a functioning political order that is sustainable so that things can still run while the government changes. Admittedly, this is a continuous process. There will be continuous contestation of ideas. And during the whole journey, we might have encountered some setbacks. We go two steps forward, one step back, or maybe the other way around. But as long as we persevere, I guess as a society, we will surely progress. And that's the hope at the end of the day.
The essence of democracy is managing differences. Very well said. On that note, thank you so much for speaking with me today, Iskandar.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Dashran.
That was Iskandar Faris, Communications Director of the think tank REFSA. If you missed any part of the show, you can check out the podcast on the BFM app, bfm.my, or pretty much wherever you get your podcasts from. I'm Dashran Johan, and this has been Beyond the Ballot Box, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.